Hello and welcome to Things Like Sun. I'm Matt Clancy. This is day two of what I'm calling Patent Data Week. The short story is that I was trying to write a post about what using patents as a data source to study innovation. It kind of grew and grew. It turned into four posts, and I'm releasing those four posts this week. Today's post, Patents Weekly Predict Innovation. So lots of social science research about innovation relies on patents as a way to measure innovation. And, you know, we might wonder, is that a bad idea? So one way to validate the use of patents as a measure of innovation is to see how well patents are correlated with other measures of technological progress. And there's a lot of work on this, and it typically finds a small but positive relationship. Let's start with Argente et al. 2023, who studied the introduction of new consumer products, mostly sold in grocery stores and drug stores, which they measure by the introduction of new UPC codes. I discussed this paper in a bit more detail in yesterday's podcast, or you can check out the newsletter. But anyway, they also have data on the number of patents that firms have in related product categories. And across all firms, they find that firms that seek a patent in a given product area are also more likely to introduce new UPC codes in the same category. So for example, they find that if a firm's patents in the previous year increase by 10%, the number of new products released increases by about 0.4%. That's a small effect, but it is pretty precisely estimated given that they have so much data. Egami and Subramanyam, 2019, focus on a more innovative industry than consumer goods, the semiconductor industry. And they've got data on all 178 active firms in the sector between 1976 and 1998. And they just have a very simple measure of innovation. Did the information storage capacity of the firm's frontier products increase over the last year? An improvement happens for roughly 35% of their observations. And remember here, an observation is a firm in a given year. And so that means if you simply assume that there are never any improvements, you'll be right 65% of the time. They then ask whether knowing the number of patents that the firm applies for in the preceding year can help you beat that benchmark. And they find, yeah, it helps a tiny bit. Because when a firm seeks more patents, it's a bit more likely to improve its products. Without patents, you can guess correctly 65% of the time. And that's just by always guessing, no, there was no improved, you know, information storage capacity in their products over the last year. And 65% of the time, there isn't. But in a model where you're more likely to guess that there has been an improvement when you can see more patents in the preceding year, you can increase the share that you're correct to about 67%. And if you restrict your count of patents assigned to the most relevant technology categories for semiconductors, well, then you can push the share of the time you guessed correctly, if there was an improvement or not, up to 70%. Benson and McGee, 2015, broadened the inquiry to a sample of 28 different technologies. So for each of these technologies, they estimate the rate of technological improvement based on metrics appropriate to that technology. For example, for LED technology, they're going to look at improvements in lumen hours per dollar. For progress in PV solar panel technology, they're going to look at kilowatt hours per dollar generated. To measure progress in aircraft transport, they're going to look at passengers multiplied by miles per hour. And for each of these metrics, they convert the gains into a percent improvement rate over some unit of time. And so when you do this, you know, among their 28 different technologies, there's been the fastest rate of improvement for optical information transmission technologies and for wireless information transmission technologies. And there's been the slowest rate of improvement for electric motors and milling machines. They then identify patents related to these 28 different technologies. And here they're going to use the technology classifications assigned to patents. And they compare improvement rates to various patent-related metrics. And for the newsletter, I made sort of two figures that display scatter plots for some of this data. One of them is the rate of improvement relative to the total number of related patents over the period 1976 to 2013. And in the other, it's the same thing, the rate of improvement on the vertical axis. But on the horizontal axis, we've taken the number of patents, but we've weighted them now by the citations received by those patents in the first 3 years, because citations are a common way to assess the value of patents. And in both of them, there's a positive correlation between them. You know, up and to the right indicates more patents, a greater rate of improvement, but it's pretty noisy. It's tightened up a little bit when you weight by citations, but it's a noisy correlation. The R squared, if that means anything to you, is on the order of like 0.1. So now let's look at one more fairly direct measure of impact, that is spending on R&D, before we're going to turn to something a little bit more complicated. So firms certainly vary in how effective they are at converting R&D spending into innovation, but all else equal, firms that spend more on R&D probably get more innovation than firms that spend less. So we can ask, are patents correlated with R&D spending? And again, yeah, they are. I've got a figure here that you can't see, taken from Grillich's 1990, which is this classic survey of the patent literature. And it's a pretty tight scatter plot showing on one axis the number or the log of the number of patents divided by the assets of the firm. So this is a way to sort of say how many patents relative to the size of the firm. And on the other axis, we've got the log of how much R&D they spend divided again by assets. So it's sort of like how much are they spending on R&D relative to the size of the firm. So it's not just saying big firms spend more on R&D and also get more patents. It's saying for a given size, firms that do more R&D also get more patents. And it's a pretty tight correlation. Across all firms, you know, it's just pretty tight. But if you actually follow even a single firm and just compare sort of its variation in R&D spending at different years to its patents in different years, you're also going to find a correlation, although it won't be quite as tight. Now, finally, we can look at the link between patenting and total factor productivity, which hereafter I'm just going to call TFP, total factor productivity growth. And that's often used as a proxy for technological progress. The basic idea behind TFP is that if you can squeeze more economic outputs out of the same number of inputs, inputs would be things like capital and labor, well, then that indicates maybe that you have better technology. The challenge is you can't measure it. You can't measure TFP directly. Instead, you directly measure outputs and inputs, and then you try to predict the outputs with the inputs in a sort of statistical model. Something like gap in your predictions is your measure of technology. But it is a nice concept because it's this general purpose measure of technology. You can apply it to like any business, basically. But it is very noisy, and it can be affected by things other than technological progress. The evidence that raw patent counts positively predict TFP growth is pretty weak. Kalyani 2023 looks at the link between patenting and TFP growth for manufacturing firms in the USA, restricting analysis to firms that are filing at least 10 patents between 1991 and 2014. For each firm, for each year, he calculates the growth in TFP for that firm over the preceding 5 years, and then he compares that to patenting. Within a given industry, in a given year, he finds that a firm with 10% more patents tends to experience about 0.5% higher TFP growth, but that effect isn't statistically significant, and it can actually turn negative, though again, not statistically significant, under some different variations in his model. So let's turn to another one. Kalyani 2023 and Park & Park 2006 perform a similar exercise at the level of industries, and they're linking the growth of TFP in various manufacturing industries to the number of new patents in that industry now. When Park & Park adjust for average TFP growth rates in a given year and for a given industry, well, they find that a 10% increase in patents is associated with a 1.6% increase in the industry's TFP growth. Kalyani 2023, the same paper that we talked about earlier, finds a similar number, a 10% increase in patenting, is associated with a 1.4% increase in TFP growth. But again, neither result can be confidently distinguished from zero. Finally, Porter and Stern, 2000, look at the link between patenting and TFP growth at the level of nations. Do nations with more patents also experience more productivity growth? Now, the challenge here is that different countries have different standards around what constitutes a patent. So to apply a uniform standard, Porter and Stern exploit the fact that many international firms seek to enter U.S. markets, and hence they obtain patents at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. So rather than use the number of patents each country has at its domestic patent office, they look at how many patents firms in different countries seek at the U.S. Patent Office, so that there's sort of this consistent standard applied. They focus on 16 OECD countries over 1973 to 1993, so about 20 years, and they construct patent stocks for each country. These are kind of what a patent stock is, essentially kind of a sum of prior patenting weighted, though, so that more recent patents count for more in the sum. And I've written a previous post about this, about patent stocks, that you can get a link to in the newsletter. This paper finds that a 10% increase in the national patent stock is associated with about a 0.5% greater national TFP growth. And actually, this result is statistically significant. Now, one reason that simple patent counts don't correlate very well with productivity growth could be that productivity growth is just a noisier measure of innovation than the other measures that we've discussed so far. Now, since the link between patents and those other measures of innovation was already pretty small, it could be that if you just add in extra noise on the sort of measure of innovation, the link becomes just too fragile, too small to discern. However, a number of papers have shown that if you reduce some of the noise in the patent data, you can identify a link between patents and TFP growth. So Kalyani 2024, which we discussed above, is not actually primarily concerned with do patents measure innovation well. Instead, it's a paper about identifying which patents track genuine technological progress. So Kalyani develops a new approach to try and separate the patent wheat from the chaff, so to speak. Specifically, Kalyani processes the text of patents to identify technical terminology, and then he looks for patents that have a larger than usual share of new technical phrases. And a phrase might be something like machine learning or neural net, or well, I guess neural network. And he's going to dub any patent that's above the 90th percentile in their use of new phrases as a creative patent. And that's against the benchmark of other patents classified in the same technology class. By this measure, about 14% of patents are creative. Now, while the link between raw patent counts and TFP growth cannot be statistically distinguished from zero, if you instead count Kalyani's creative patents, you actually do get a pretty robust correlation. Among individual firms, a 10% increase in their creative patents, remember those are ones that have a bunch of new technical phrases in them, a 10% increase in creative patents is associated with roughly 2% higher TFP growth. If you focus on industries, you actually find that a 10% increase in creative patents is associated with a 10% increase in TFP growth in that industry. And in both cases, those estimates now can be statistically distinguished from zero. Kogan et al. 2017 also finds that improved measures of patenting are correlated with TFP growth. They've got data on publicly traded firms from 1926 through 2010, including information on each firm's patents and each firm's TFP growth. Now, recognizing that patents vary substantially in their value, they take two different approaches towards estimating what's the value of those patents. In one approach, the value of a patent is related to how many citations the patent goes on to receive from other patents. A patent that receives no citations in their model or in their estimate is worth one. Like you might say, it's worth one patent. A patent that receives an average number of citations, four patents in the year that it was granted, is worth two. A patent that receives twice as many citations as the average for patents granted in its year is worth three, and it goes up from there. Now, their other approach, remember they take two approaches, looks at how the stock price of the patent holder changes when the patent gets granted. And they're going to use these movements of the stock price to try and infer what does the market think that these patents are worth at the time that they're granted. Now, using each of these measures, they look at how the total estimated value of a firm's patents is correlated with the firm's TFP growth. So instead of counting patents, we're adding up their value. And remember, a value can come either from information on citations or stock price movements. And now a 10% increase in the value of a firm's patents is associated with a 0.5 to 1% increase in TFP growth. That's if you use value measured by citations received by the patents. Or a 10% increase in value might be associated with a 1.3 to 2.4% increase in TFP growth if you use this measure based on stock price movements. Again, in both cases, we can estimate those associations with enough precision to statistically sum up. Across a variety of indicators, we see a positive association between patenting and measures of innovation. When there are more patents, firms are more likely to offer products with new UPC codes or semiconductors with improved storage capacity. We observe a similar relationship between rates of technical improvement and the number of patents for a pretty wide range of technologies. And finally, there's a pretty tight correlation between R&D spending and patenting. And when we look at productivity growth, well, the evidence becomes more mixed. Raw patent counts and TFP growth are just not generally robustly correlated, although we have one paper here that finds they are correlated at the level of nations. But if we try to improve on raw patent counts by trying to separate out the good and the bad patents, various measures of what you might call good patents do tend to be consistently and positively associated with TFP growth. Now, one last important caveat. As a general rule, this link that is uncovered is a small one, far below kind of a one-for-one proportional correlation. If you increase patenting by 10%, you'll typically see much less than a 10% increase in whatever measure of innovation you're using. Thanks. And now it's time for the standard end of the episode boilerplate. You've been listening to a podcast from New Things Under the Sun, a living literature review with the mission of communicating what academia knows about innovation in accessible but rigorous research syntheses. New Things Under the Sun is a living literature review, which means I go back and update these research syntheses as new research is published or I discover it. The podcast you listen to is taken from the first published version of one of these syntheses. To see if there's been any updates about the claims made in this podcast, or to learn more about this project, head to newthingsunderthesun.com.